Pulling up Slink Tech Show.
Good evening, and welcome to the Linux Link Tech Show. We're so glad to have you here tonight. Before we get started on this rather mild February 11th, 2004, evening on a Wednesday, we're going to play our promo, our epic promo, a promo of epic proportions, which we haven't cut down yet, but next week we will. So if you're listening, jump on the IRC chat. And let us know that you're there. We'll be right back in just a minute.
Hi, folks. This is Link from the Linux Link Tech Show. Have you ever thought to yourself, I have a question for these guys? Or I wonder if they would review my product? Or why don't they talk about this? Or maybe, I sure would like to support these fellas somehow. Or just, how do I get in touch with them? Well, the easy answer is to email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. You can let us know any questions, suggestions, or information you might have, and perhaps even get mentioned on the show. Email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. And let us know how we're doing and whether or not you enjoy the show. And also, catch us on IRC every Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern by pointing your favorite IRC client to our server, thelinuxlink.net, and joining channel Pound Tech Show. Hope to see you there.
Hey, hey, Dan cutting in here. Do you have any questions, comments, complaints? Don't like what Alan said last time? Feel free to email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. Do you live in or around Bethlehem, Pennsylvania? Plan on being in the area some Wednesday night? If so, and you would like to join us in the studio, we would love to have you. Again, email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. Linux is a community project. Being a community project, it tends to foster regular gatherings of Linux enthusiasts who collectively call themselves Linux users groups. Chances are, there is a Linux users group in your area. We here at the Tech Show belong to the Lehigh Valley Linux Users Group, so if you hail from the area, come join us. Membership is free and fraught with fun. If you're new to Linux, then consider checking out our sister organization, the Linux Special Interest Group, run by LVLUG member Jeff Zartler. The Linux SIG caters to newbies and runs hands-on labs. If you are south of us, be sure to look up the Bucks County Linux Users Group or the Philadelphia Linux Users Group. Those to the east, there is the New Jersey Linux Users Group. More information can be found at thelinuxlink.net, which strives to be the unofficial portal to Linux and Linux happenings in the Lehigh Valley. If you find yourself in one of those rare locations that is not conveniently near any Linux Users Group, get your name and desires out there on the web. Contact the closest lugs, and chances are you will find neighbors who are looking to get together. All you need is a few enthusiastic people and a place to meet, be it a living room, basement, library, or local pub. You will meet new people, learn some stuff, and have boatloads of fun. So remember, support your local users groups. Finally, we here at the Linux Link Tech Show thank you for listening and hope you enjoy this episode as much as we enjoyed putting it together. Yeah, the promo. Promo. Good evening. I'm Dan Washko, your host tonight, along with the other two hosts, Lincoln Fezzedin.
Hey.
And Alan Metzler.
Hey, what's up?
And how are you guys doing tonight?
Good.
Pretty good.
All right. Ready for a fun and exciting evening? Got a jam-packed episode today.
Absolutely.
got Link talking about his things.
Yeah, we're just going to let Dan talk because Dan is our hostess with the mostest.
Yummy.
Tasty brownie, treat. The brownie master.
Brownie master. Yeah.
I didn't make him, the wife did. Hey, you should be thankful she thinks master. Of you.
Shazam!
Oh my God, that's loud in my ears. See, Alan was kind enough to bring over a
bunch of cables.
Bunch of cables so we can get Link's laptop hooked up into the mixer and have sound effects once again.
That does not compute.
Without crashing the server.
Yeah, without crashing. We've already crashed once. And that was loading in the
audio. But that wasn't from the sound effects, man. That was...
I'm telling you. The sound effects are good. We can do them now. We don't have to worry about crashing. Link's running them on his laptop, running Windows ME over there.
Yeah, what we have to do, though, is hopefully Moondog is, like, listening live. And we got to get him to check it out and tell us if they're too loud or, you know, whatnot.
You're listening, too, on the backside, aren't you, Alan?
I'm listening to the stream, yeah.
Is the sound effects too loud?
No, actually, they sounded good. I was making sure the mic sounded all right.
Link, Alan's on your backside.
Yes, he is.
So, you have any good news there, Link?
Good news.
Good news. Gun news.
Gun news.
Gun news.
Gun news. You all right? What? No,
or should we
really
just go right to
gun news? Really.
Should we go right to Alan with the News Forge update?
I think so. Yeah.
What?
Tap me up a little bit because I can hardly hear it on the stream.
Smack.
All right.
we need the smacking sound.
Yeah, we need the smacking sound.
with the news.
Alan with the News Forge update.
Actually, I don't use News Forge. I just like Google everything.
Alan with the Google Forge update.
The Google King.
About 5 minutes before we start the show.
Cool.
I have something to talk about on it. Probably the biggest ones are the latest version of the MyDooms virus, which is floating around. I don't know if anybody's seen
it. Oh, it's got a new name now, right? It's MyDoom Squishy or something?
MyDoom Squishy? Yeah.
It's Doom Juice.
That's
Dead
it.
Dead Hat.
Doom Juice Dead Hat.
And Dead Hat, according to BBC here.
Now, this is the one that's supposed to attack Microsoft servers, right?
The Doom Juice one attacks Microsoft, and the Dead Hat uninstalls My Doom for you, which would probably be good if it stopped right there, and then cripples your antivirus protection so that you can be taken over again.
So why does it uninstall itself?
Well, no, it uninstalls the first version.
It uninstalls the first version and puts the second one in. I get it.
You know, the sad thing is it probably does a better cleanup job than the antivirus software
or the uninstall.
Or Windows uninstall.
I don't know, with names like that, though, it can't be like a Linux person putting these things out. Because no one would name something Doom Juice. I don't think. That's like a 13-year-old script kiddie that's doing this now.
Oh, yeah. They wouldn't name it, like, Squishy or anything either, so.
Doom Juice Squishy.
Yes, we have something for you, Microsoft.
I fart in your general direction!
Yeah. That sounded like it was echoing there. But
is
everything sounds like it's echoing through my headphones.
Oh, that's because you have one on each ear, Dan. It's just bouncing back and forth, man.
Bouncing back and forth inside your skull.
Bouncing back and forth
inside,
yep.
Are you running any Windows machines over at work? You hit by any of those worms?
We have a whole bunch of Windows machines, but I don't... Yeah, I lock them up pretty tight on the network. I don't let anybody get anything out, so...
Are you on Windows?
Pretty much they're all right.
2000?
Windows 2000, Windows NT4, Windows ME... Windows 98, Windows 95. There's probably like Windows 3.11 running somewhere that I don't know about. Windows XP.
You know about the new patch new security patch release for one of Microsoft's most severe critical updates, most severe holes in their software for Windows 2000.
I was reading something about it on Google, but like since I don't really run Microsoft very much, I didn't pay a whole lot of attention to it.
Well, needless to say, their update site was flooded today. I was only able to update 2-3 machines. It was such a pain in the butt.
Now, can't you, like, download the update onto your server and update from your server so it has to go?
Yeah, you can. But I keep forgetting where that site is because I don't go to it that often. It's just a nightmare overall. But then you get some things like the patch. Well, you download the one component, and then it goes out and downloads more components.
Mm-hmm.
That's particularly with the service packs and Microsoft's Internet Explorer crap. Now, which, of course, they released a patch for that recently, and makes it just as secure as any other browser, according to Microsoft.
Well, there's another one that they found that they found on Tuesday that affects all of the Windows platforms again. On it, which is
what's that called, a power button?
I came in the back of this, so I was trying to get the microphones working again over here.
That's what we brought up the first one, right? Yeah, it was on Tuesday.
Tuesday, yeah.
Now, wait, but not 98. It doesn't affect 98.
Well, yeah, I guess so. It says here it attacks all of them, but yeah, maybe not.
Everything attacks all of them.
Say, it's Windows.
One
does everything.
Did you read my blog today?
I did, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was just so pissed at Internet Explorer again. It's just so ugly, so horrible.
Because it sucks, man.
And it's such a shame of a browser. When you run Netscape or Mozilla on the same workstation, it looks 10 times better in those than it does on Internet Explorer. Yet
that does not compute.
Internet Explorer, just because it comes installed by default. Because it's integrated. They're all free, but it's already integrated. I hate it. Damn them.
Damn them indeed. We have a message for you, Microsoft.
In your general direction.
Yes. Damn them.
This is probably going to get annoying to people. You play any sound effects. You have to understand, this is like a sound effect test show.
It's a new toy.
We're gonna check it out and make sure everything works good, and then I'm going to have to hunt around all week until next week to find appropriate sound effects. So,
well, hopefully soon we'll have the phone patch, or at least another attempt at that.
Then we can have Chris call in instead of showing up. He doesn't have to come all the way out here. He can just call right in every day, every show. We can have like a moment with Chris.
A moment with Chris.
And then we have to call on somebody for the translation.
Yeah, we have to have, you know, we'll have him talk for a minute, and then we'll, you know, have a translator.
All right. Link, last week we didn't get to the one topic that we should have gotten to. And
what
that was resident
that?
Computing. Consulting. Why don't computing. You talk about computing? I thought it was consulting.
It's computing.
It's computing.
It's a consulting business, but...
Why don't you give a little...
I will, but I wanted to make mention of something first. And that is, for those of you who do not know yet, the brand new Mozilla Firebird has come out, and they renamed it to Firefox. You can get this at mozilla.org, and this is the Phoenix / Firebird / Firefox version 0.8, I believe. And I've been using it since its release, which was just a couple days ago. And it works really, really well.
You're using it now, right?
Absolutely. I really like it. It's even faster than... And I didn't think it would be possible, but it's even faster than, like, Firebird was. Which is awesome.
Yeah, I haven't used it a lot, but, you know, it seems to be much faster. Even I have used the Windows. I did download the Windows version of it because at work I'm forced to use that Windows from time to time. And it does even seem faster there as well.
It's awesome, man. I love it. Good job, Mozilla guys. You guys are doing awesome. Not that I think any of you are listening, but on the off chance that you are, good job. You guys are doing really great. And I honestly believe that this line of development with the Phoenix / Firebird / Firefox browser setup is going to end up winning like the browser wars because it's so much faster than anything else that I've used, you know. And it, you know, it's got all the normal functionality is there except for, you know, what mail to, because it has its, they split off the separate mailer, right?
Right.
Just called what again?
Thunderbird.
Thunderbird.
Let's put off the mailer and the composer.
Thunderbird. Now, I'll tell you, the last time I was using Thunderbird, I wasn't thinking about email, man.
I was just going to say something about that, too.
Now, you know, if they come out with a new Thunderbird, but then change it to, I don't know.
Shouldn't they change it to, like, Thunder Fox now?
Yeah, Thunder Fox. Or...
Thundercats! Thunder! Thunder! Thundercats! Oh!
And will it carry over your preferences from the old one?
The 80s cartoons.
Will it carry over your... Because that's the one thing Firefox doesn't do, is carry over your preferences. No, it does. It does.
No, it grabbed my
grabbed
stuff
your preferences.
Yeah.
But it's just now there's a dot Firebird and now a dot Firefox or Mozilla.
There's a dot Phoenix.
Dot Phoenix, that's it. And a dot Firefox now. It'd be nice if they just left the names alone.
Yeah, but it's still, you know, it's not even like an official 1.0 release yet, you know what I mean? We're just getting all jonesed over this thing, and it's not even a 1.0 yet. It's still got a couple of renditions before it hits there.
So just think how much better it could get.
Yeah, and it's got to get better. Hopefully they don't, you know, they leave it kind of like it is and don't bloat it all up again.
What holds them back from being a 1.0?
The guy who's releasing the versions, they number it.
Okay, but what? Why? What? Now, officially, like a 1.0 is like an official stable release, is what they usually call it, right?
I guess
like
maybe.
Kind of consider themselves developmental.
Well, maybe.
Beta.
Probably what I would think is when you start releasing code, you probably have on the outset a list of things you want to accomplish in the program, or a list of features and an outline, and. You know, probably that would be the 1.0 release when you get all of those features combined.
Yeah, all the features you want, yeah.
What else could you be adding to it to make it any... You know, you can probably add some more stuff and then we'll call it Mozilla after a while after you add all these features. But
yeah,
it's damn good. It's fast. It never crashes on me. It displays the pages beautifully. It should be a 1.0 soon.
It should be. It should have been a 1.0, you know... Back on V7 when it was Firebird, I thought it was really nice then, and I'm even more impressed now. And back at V6, V.6, it was still Firebird back then.
Yes,
0.6. And I liked
Firebird,
it then.
Wait, when Firebird, Phoenix, Firefox?
No, Phoenix, Firebird, Firefox, and it was still. Was still Firebird at 0.6 when I first started using it. And I thought it was really cool then. Yeah, I thought it was really cool then. And then 0.7 came out. And that was awesome because it was like twice as fast. And 8 is out now. It's even faster. So I can't wait. Bring it on, man.
That's right. Mozilla, Firebird. And before that, it was Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
Phoenix, Firebird, Firefox.
Something like that.
And then it'll be called the Ostrich or something for the final release.
The Ostrich.
Something like
running
that.
Running Ostrich. Burning Seal.
Something.
Little something something? On
little,
side?
Little something something. We got time to take a phone call.
Sure.
Hey, just a sec, I'll check. Amanda Huggin-Kiss? Hey, I'm looking for Amanda Huggin-Kiss. Why can't I find a man to hug and kiss?
Maybe your standards are too high.
You know, SOB. If I ever find out who you are, I'm going to shove a sausage down your throat and stick starving dogs in your butt.
See, can we legally play that?
That's nice. It's yeah, because it's a sound clip. Legal, we can use audio clips, right?
Yeah,
and on that note, before we launch off in the Pheasant in Computing,
okay.
I want to talk about the Simpsons Hit and Run. And
do
you
it up,
played
yeah.
it. You
yes,
played
I
it,
played
right?
It. But not, you, not you as much it. As you.
No,
have.
I
don't. No, it's an awesome game. If you have a GameCube or a PlayStation 2, or in Alan's case,
or
an Xbox, it's available for all three of those systems. It's... I would equate it kind of like Super Mario type game, but with driving and the Simpsons characters.
Driving and crashing into things.
Driving and crashing into it. A little more violent, a lot more funny, but it's kind of that run around trying to find things, solving puzzles. And the puzzles aren't that intricate, but it's still a lot of fun if you like to do you know, those kind of games. Even if you don't and you're a Simpsons fan, you're going to love this game, right? It's not something you want to rent. It's something you want to buy. Because the levels are really, really large. You get to drive around all over Springfield. You can go in and out of certain buildings like the Quickie Mart, the Savin' Shop, I think it's called, the Simpsons House.
Yeah.
I mean, there's all the characters are there, Flanders, Carl.
Plus, you can run over people.
Abu. Yeah, you can run over. Apu is you actually get to be Apu.
You get to be Apu.
Yeah. That's one of the characters. You can't be Maggie, so they threw in Abu.
That's so Apu. Funny, man.
Shazam!
So great.
Shazam, you're Apu!
You get to drive some really cool vehicles. I like Moe's sedan. That's one of the best. That thing flies.
I got a kick out of the Plow King.
Yeah.
Driving around the Plow King for a while. I thought that was pretty funny. Just drive over stuff. You could jump over things.
Was it the first time I blew up in a car? I was jumping over that tire fire. Did you see that in the game? That big
on the way over to the
trailer park.
Yeah, the trailer park.
I missed the jump and I landed in a tire fire. And it blew up. And Homer goes, "Save me, Jeebus!" They got all the quotes, the great quotes from the Simpsons movies. You know. All of them are there. It's just great. It's a rocking game. The graphics are spectacular. It's fun. It is fun.
It is. Definitely rent it if you can buy it. Yeah.
Buy it. You'd be better off buying it because it's so huge. There's so much to do. It's not just solving the missions. If you find all the stuff in it, there's like X amount of what are called bonus cards per level. And each card has a picture.
You got to catch all the coins, too.
Yeah, the coins.
In order to buy the cars.
The camera bees. The bees that have the cameras on them.
I've seen those a couple of times. I haven't had to do anything with them.
Well, you got to kick them and they blow up. And once you get all of them, and you get the coins and everything. And then the cards. And each card has a picture from an episode and a little blurb about the episode and a quote from a character on it.
You have definitely played it more than I have.
I have played it a lot. It was an awesome game. Funny, funny, funny.
What's that other one that you've been talking about? Did you get some other one too?
Blood Rain, which I think is another one that's available for all three of them.
That one I haven't seen that.
You're a female, a bodacious female, half vampire.
which is the reason that Dan bought it.
Well, no, I bought it for the violence, but
he bought it
for the violence, but he'll stay for the bodacious vampire.
Yeah, bodacious. But I like the Resident Evil series of games, and I like the horror games, but so this is kind of like an action horror. And you play Blood Rain, whose mother was raped by a vampire, and your ultimate goal is to find your father to kill him. But you get recruited by an organization that's operating out of early 20th century in Louisiana. And I think you go off into Germany and Argentina also throughout the game. But I guess the big draw for that is the bodacious babes in it. Now, during the tutorial session, your mentor, who is another half-vampire female, comes running up to you to talk to you, and as she's talking, her breasts are jiggling. You know, you don't see that often in the video game.
Are you playing this on GameCube, right?
Yes.
You don't see that very often on GameCube either.
Well, no, you don't, and you don't hear them throwing around the F word in games as much, but they do that in here too.
If you like
women with their breasts jiggling. Hey, you want to cough right into the microphone next time?
Sure.
Instead of just drowning everybody out? If you want a game with hot women and jiggly breasts, copious amounts of violence, and the F word being tossed around, there you go.
It's
at least worth a rental, I think. And I got it for $14 used at EBX.
That's why I buy all my games used. I don't trying to. I think I have one game that bought new, and I got it for Christmas. So, but other than that, I always buy the used games because I figure that's a little less money going to Microsoft's pocket. You know, when I buy like Xbox games and stuff.
I see what you're saying. That's why I don't have an Xbox. Then none of my money goes to Microsoft's pocket.
I have an old beat up PlayStation 1. PlayStation, like the original PlayStation. Not like a PS1.
Not the little one. The big
one. I'm not talking about, like, they have another one. It's called a PS1.
Okay, I know what you're talking about.
Just the original PlayStation that I play with every now and then. But I'm not much of a gamer. Except for lately, I've been, like, occasionally, like, after lunch, I've been getting a little bit bored at work. Or, you know, lazy, however you want to call it. Anyway, I've been looking around on the web and checking out some of these Flash media games, since Flash works so well on Firebird and Firefox. And I played this one today called Mini Putt, I think it was.
Are these Flash-based games?
They're Flash-based games. I'll have to find a link and stick it up somewhere, because it's really fun, even for a dumb little, you know, golf game. I had a lot of fun with it. And then there's the Pingu, which is the one that I already had up on my blog with the little penguin that shoots down and the polar bear.
That mini
shoots him down with a bat kind of thing.
That's not a version of the old arcade game that you used to play with a trackball, is it?
No.
It's kind of like a small...
No, this is cool. This is 18 holes of miniature golf, man. It's
that's what I mean.
It's really cool.
It's a miniature golf type thing. Do you remember that mini putt?
Yeah, but this is not. It's not quite the same. No.
Is it 18 holes are the same, or do they change like each different? Is each game different? Random holes.
I only played one game and I didn't replay.
Well, come on, man.
We played the entire
afternoon.
I'll
have to invest more time in it. You know,
I'd have been at work. I'd have been. Oh yeah.
No, I actually had some work to do. I managed to do 18 holes, and I thought it was pretty cool. But
that's awesome. What is it, mini putt? And where are you getting these?
You know what? I just hit Google, and I'm looking for, you know, games and SWF. And
I did like the one you had off your blog.
It was pretty cool. Yeah, that was
pretty fun.
That was Pingu, I think is what it's called.
That was good.
That's a lot of fun.
What's the furthest you've gotten them to go?
I got 321.1 yards, I think.
Yeah,
and I even have a screenshot to prove it.
I played one night, and my goal was to play till I broke 300. And it took a little while. You got to get it just right.
It's that timing thing. You really got to snag it.
The best I had was about 200 on it. So.
Is that what you were doing instead of updating your blog there, Alan?
Pretty much, yeah.
I really have to.
No, I updated it yesterday, so.
Oh, there we go. I think Moondog just got us the link for the mini golf game, and I'm gonna have to open that sucker up just to make sure it's the right one.
I did finally post the pictures from our Linux trip.
Yes, I looked at those today. They were pretty good.
I think that, the quality of the picture sucks, but at least in my view. But that's,
well, what do you expect from a phone?
Well, that's just it. You know, I'm taking it out of context. It is a phone that I'm using to take pictures with, and it's the first generation for that particular model. So give it a couple of years. They'll be really good.
Oh, well, don't tell me I don't have Flash installed on a Firefox.
I had to copy my Flash plugins over from my Firebird because I didn't install Firebird.
No, but I was playing it on Firefox today at work. I'm sure of it. So,
but I had to move my Flash plugins stuff over.
It's entirely possible.
Unless your Flash plugin is in your home directory.
Yeah, it should be in my home directory.
Because I have mine installed globally. So I had to put it over globally. Filler. Are you there now? Are you happy?
I mean, come on.
Gotta check what out?
It's not. It doesn't, man.
It's not. It's Flash is installed on it.
Just copy those two files over.
Copy which two files? Okay, Dan's going to give me a tutorial. How do I get which
There's
two
files? There's two files. It's in your plugins directory. Probably on your Mozilla Firebird plugins directory. Is it in there?
In the Phoenix, maybe?
Yeah.
I got plugin registration dat.
It should be, what is it, Flash?
I think when you install the plugins, it puts them in...
Puts them in a
Netscape, doesn't it?
No. It does. It will put them in a Mozilla one, but I usually install mine manually, so I'm taking it when I do it manually.
I have no idea where it's putting them in.
Are you sure it's not in your Mozilla plugin directory, which would be USR
Lib?
I don't
have a... Yeah, but I would have installed it... You know what? Maybe I just didn't install the Flash plugin. I bet that's what it is. And
do you want it?
I can fix that because... Well, you have a web page up. If I hit the Flash for it, it'll point me to the right spot, right?
Mm-hmm. Just go to slsd.org. It'll get you. Just go to flash.com. That's where you get it from. Where'd you get your Flash from, Alan? Your flare. Your Friday's flare. Remember when Fridays used to have flare? Sorry.
That's okay. No, I don't have Flash on here at all. I haven't even tried it since I put Firefox on here.
Oh, it works really good. And I'm pretty sure it copied it, because like I said, I was playing this game on Firefox today, and I put Firefox on there like 2 days ago. So
I know when I installed it at work, I had to reinstall it. It didn't copy everything over from the Firebird directory, but you know, it was all of a 2-minute install. I just let it go grab the plugin and reinstall
mine was
it
fine.
Properly.
This is really slow. Really slow.
Oh, okay, this is not at all like the old mini putt, I think it was.
Well, you got it?
Yeah.
Cool. Oh, that's why I can't get Flash, because Dan's freaking playing a Flash media game.
Oh, well, you
the one that I was supposed to be playing. Dude.
Yeah. Now we're all going to end up sitting here playing this darn game instead of doing the show.
No, we're doing the show, too. Everybody else that's, like, listening to the show is going to be going to hit this thing and, you know, playing the game, too. Probably, right?
That's right.
I mean, that's what I'm thinking.
That's so cool.
But at any rate, while we're all busy doing that and stuff, we should probably do... what time is it? Oh, 34 after the hour. It's time for our musical interlude.
It's time for us to crash.
We're going to try and play this musical interlude thing. And
there we go.
Hang in here and we'll catch in a couple.
All right. How about that? That was our... That was our Frampton song right there. Wow, that and the promo. What's that Frampton song? Do You Feel Like I Do? What's that actually called? Is that what it's called? Do You Feel Like I Do?
I think so, yeah.
The one that the DJ puts on when he has to go take visit to the Porcelain God.
Album.
Huh?
It's most of that album. All those songs are like 15 minutes long.
That's off of Frampton Comes Alive, right?
Yes. 1976.
That's when Alan was, 24 back then?
When I had... No, I was you damn youngins, you. 14, I think, but... No, what the hell was
it? Well, speaking of that, of older folk, of the elderly, Joe Simpson is not dead. He's alive and driving Taxi in Allentown.
Yes.
It was good to see him back there.
Yeah, it was. It was really good to see him. I was wondering where he's been this whole time.
It was good to see him.
And he's not with CFK either. Nobody is anymore. Oh, that's some crazy stuff. But we were talking about video games before the break, and Link was talking about his adventures with the mini golf, which is a really cool and addicting game. And are you still playing it right now?
No, I haven't been able to get to the site because someone's hogging all the bandwidth, Dan.
No, I'm not on it anymore.
Dan's hogging all the bandwidth for it.
I'm not on it anymore. That's probably the Doom Juice worm affecting overall internet. Access.
No, that's what it is. Mm-hmm.
Doom juice. Well, we got off topic of the Pheasant in Computing, and we should probably get back on to that topic because I don't want to skip it this week. It's a very important thing because it's linked.
It's important because, Dan doesn't have anything to talk about this week.
No, Dan does have something to talk about, but I'm giving you the floor because we skipped over you last week.
Okay. Well, here's the story then. And let me open up a tab in this browser here so I can...
Let me tell you about tab browsing, man.
My site.
Once you have it, you don't want
to
lose
go,
it.
You can never go back to normal.
And then you pull up Internet Explorer when you have to do some work on somebody else's machine. You just want to vomit. Because you know what's annoying?
Because you hurt your finger closing all the pop-ups.
That, but what's even more annoying is when you open a new window, it opens the same thing that was in the old window a second on the next window. So, you got the same thing coming in, but if you go down and you click on Internet Explorer again, it opens up an empty window. If you started from the icon, but if you do File New Window,
you get a duplicate.
I don't want to talk about it. Link, let's get back to Pheasant Computing.
Well, I can verify that. First of all, I do actually have Flash running on Firefox now, so not that I played the golf game yet, but you can bet I'm gonna do that when I get home at least. Here's what I did. A couple of weeks ago, I decided that I wanted to start up, start up a small business. I'm gonna try anyway. And in a nutshell, it's just an IT consultant referral kind of business where I can get a bunch of IT people together, and if I can farm some work out, I'll just match the work up with the appropriate IT person and take a little percentage off the top and let them go with it. And that way I don't have to have any employees and take, pay taxes on them and all of that other crap. They can just, they're paid subcontractors, sort of. But what I wanted to do was create a website for this. So I started looking around on the web, and a lot of the new websites that I'm seeing, first of all, they have banners, the banner across the top, the header banner, that are way, way better than anything that I had, and it had been a really long time since I've even attempted anything like that. And the second thing that I saw is you keep seeing these sites that have these, they have like tables on them that have rounded corners. Pop out tables with rounded corners and things, different colors, so I started looking at that stuff, just to make things a little bit more attractive and give a 3D look to the pages and make it modern and all of the happy business. And
I come to find out that the rounded corner tables are actually done for the most part with tables. You can do parts of them with CSS as well, but the ones that I stuck with, I did with tables. And basically, you have to, you make a little graphic that you split up into 8 pieces, 4 corners and 4 sides, and you have to piece that together and repeat it through your table with your text in the middle. And it really is, it's an interesting thing to do, and it really makes your site look really sharp, too. But it's a pain in the butt, because you absolutely have to make sure that your graphics are the same size, man. Like, I did this whole thing and set all these tables up, and one of my graphics up in one corner, like the top right corner, was 1 pixel short. 1 pixel, man. And it hosed up everything on my whole page until I found it. So you really have to, pay attention with that stuff. But the cool thing about doing this whole business was that, it got me looking around and doing some more professional-looking website stuff, so maybe I can, scrounge some business on that end of it. The cool thing is that I got to know GIMP a little bit better. And now, all of you who are listening to this should know by now that the GIMP
is... We all love GIMP.
Yeah, the GIMP is just the best image processing package out there, as far as I'm concerned, and as far as everybody else is concerned, too. Basically, what I use for that... Well, first of all, I just made my little graphic in the GIMP, and then cut it up, and I didn't even make it in the GIMP. I made it in, X-Paint. And I cut it up in the GIMP and separated it out and did all that stuff. But the cool stuff that I did, cooler than the rounded tables, which is just, you have to learn the table stuff, is the header graphics at the top of my pages. Now, if you look at them, at the top of my pages, you're going to see that I have, I have several graphics that are superimposed on top of each other. Some of them that are filtered out so that they're semi-transparent and blurry, and all of this stuff was really a piece of cake with the GIMP. The two things that I wanted to talk about real quick before I hand it back over to Dan, primarily, that you want to check out in GIMP to do some of this stuff is open up a graphic and go down to Script Foo and check out your there's Script Foo, and the next selection is called Selection, and then Fade Outline. Now, what that Fade Outline will do, that lets you fade the graphic toward the background, so that it makes it transparency. It controls the opaqueness and the transparency of the graphic. It took me a little while to find it, because you would think that they would call it opaque or the transparency or something like that, but no, they call it, they call it Fade Outline. And you just pretty much you can use that to fade one graphic right into the next one. Looks really, really sharp. The next thing that I used under Script Foo was under Decor, and that is round corners, which creates like a cool little mouse pad type of thing for my graphics that I stuck up on there. That's a really neat look. And what else did I use? Just their general cut and paste options to chop photos out and stick them together. There's so much stuff that you can do. I can't even describe it all. The massive amount of stuff, but just playing around with some of it was really, really cool. And I never knew that there was, that there was so much that you could do under the GIMP. Pulling all these graphics together. You always see, you always see this stuff done, and everybody tells you that the package that you need to get for this is Photoshop. Well, of course, Photoshop doesn't run under Linux. It does, however, under OS X, right? Mac OS X?
Yes.
Photoshop?
And I have used Photoshop before, long, long ago on Windows, and I thought it was...
It runs a lot of money, too.
Yes, it does. And I thought it was an all right program. But I'm telling you, everything that I have done with Photoshop or any other image processing program is easily done with the GIMP as well. The only drawback you might have is like figuring out exactly which command does what. But, you know, with Linux, you're not paying for it, and you have the time to piss around if you want to piss around. Plus, I guess, you know, reading the man pages would help a little bit, too.
Reading the man pages.
But it's just a cool thing, and by all means, you know, check my websites out for some examples of the stuff that I did. And if you have any cool ideas for stuff, you know, let me know.
Let us all know at the Tech Show.
Absolutely.
You know what goes really well hand-in-hand with the GIMP? Soddy Potty.
Sci-fi. Mm.
That's a fun vector-based application. You could actually create your own selections.
You did some fine sharks with it last night.
Yeah. I liked it. That was fun, you know. I was playing around and made some fish on a presentation, which I eventually had to put up on the website. Well, why not? It's done in open office.
It's all ready to go.
It's in Flash and PDF right now. I just throw out an HTML version of it, too.
Cool.
Cover all the bases. But, you know, you can create... Because now they have the pathing capability in the GIMP, so you can create a path, a custom path, in Soddy Potty, export it out, and import it into the GIMP. And then you got, like, a little custom path there, make a selection out of it. So, you know, you can make fish out of all your photographs. And then probably bend it around with some of the filters in there, and then apply the fade to back. Was that it? What was the fade to... What was that script you were talking about? The script
dude.
We went fade to... The one about the...
it is... I'll tell you. It's in script foo selection fade outline.
Fade outline. There you go. What version of GIMP are you running? 1.3.2, is that it?
Let me tell you here.
What are you running over there, Alan?
I'll fire it up and let you know.
Because I know I'm running about 2. Two something.
1.2.3.
1.2.3.
1.2.3.
Because I'm running
this
the 2
series. This is the stock Slackware 9.0 version of the GIMP.
I love the 2 series, man.
1.2.3. Well, that's what I was, you know, most of the stuff that I was doing on the 2 series that comes stock with 9.1.
Right.
On my new workstation setup, so.
Yes.
And I liked it. Everything worked really good. And once I figured out, you know, the worst thing is, like, you have so many options
right.
with the GIMP. Like, if you want to do a logo or something like that, good God, you get in there and there's, like, 50 different kinds of logos. And by the time you get down 2 or 3 of them, you have forgotten what the 2 or 3 that you just did look like. So you got to go through, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
or you got to leave them up on your screen and label the windows or something.
You've forgotten which one that you wanted to, looked good before.
There's such a huge selection of cool stuff that you can do that you sort of get lost in it for a while.
And you can make your own logos.
Yeah.
You can make your own logo creation scripts, too.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure, it's neat.
I don't know
stuff,
how.
Man.
There was was it Linux Magazine? I think it was ran a few articles on scripting with the GIMP.
Well, the European one has a whole group of articles that Linux Magazine, I think it is.
Right.
They have like a whole running article, story of different things you can do with GIMP.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I don't have all the beginning ones. And last time I looked, I didn't seem to see them on the website.
But it's awesome stuff. It makes me want to go out and like get a job doing web graphics or something, just because it was so fun to play with when I was doing it, you know?
Wow. It is. A lot of fun. A lot of excitement. The GIMP. Soddy Potty. Alan, you're using what? A notepad?
I draw slowly in notepad with just straight lines.
ASCII art, man.
Oh, you know,
really do ASCII art with notepad.
Speaking of notepad, and I don't know,
this
came down at work last week. The secretary said to us that some company needed we're supposed to upload information to them, and it had to be in a comma delimited file, but they wanted it already preset up with specified tables and tables, or yeah, specified columns with column size and maximum size already inputted in there through Notepad. So, like, yeah, you can build this in Notepad, and you can put all this information in. I'm thinking to myself, who the hell would do something like that in Notepad?
But now, wait, that doesn't make sense because
I know it doesn't.
A comma delineated file means that the end of the information is delineated with a comma. That means there aren't any leading or trailing spaces in there.
Every column begins or ends with a column.
Right.
With a comma.
There were no spaces in there. Like, if there was a space, it would be two commas together. You know what I mean?
But for some reason, they wanted also in there is that you had to set the field size. I'm sorry, that's what it's called.
How the hell do you set a field size on a...
I don't know.
On a comma delineated file.
That was my question, but I didn't have to suffer through that project. Somebody else took care of it, and we had no idea.
Wow, that's the weirdest thing ever.
Well, if you want to set up field size, wouldn't you want to use some kind of database to do that? Because I don't think a spreadsheet.
You would have to use. You could use a flat ASCII table, which is probably what they were doing, but. Like, if you're using a flat database, an ASCII
right.
database, and you set it up with field sizes, you don't need a delineator. The delineator is the number of spaces. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, field 3 starts at character 45, whether it's a space or whatever the hell it
but
is.
But then you have to put all those spaces in there yourself in
right.
between each.
Yeah.
And that's...
That's why I mean, like, the whole, you know... comma delineated kind of negates you having spaces in there. With
well, maybe they were mistaken. Maybe that's what they wanted was the ASCII database with the files in there, and somehow it got misconstrued. Someone said comma delineated.
It's a suit
file.
Thing, right?
It's a suit thing? I don't know what it
it's
is.
It's a suit thing.
The pointy hair bluff.
Yep, thing. It's a suit thing. When it, you know, they hear these buzzwords, and they're thinking to themselves, you know, ah, what I want is a
it looks really
comma
nice
delineated
Excel.
File. But really what you need to have is the spaces in there so that the fields are the same size. It's a suit thing. They don't know what the hell they're talking about.
I don't know what I'm talking about either.
But we know that, and we love you for it, Dan.
But I do have one more thing to talk about, if we can get onto that subject.
It's all you, man.
Smell something funny, and it ain't me.
Look over here.
All right. The other day, I went out to my favorite grocery store, Wegmans, because I go out there. It's my favorite grocery store. And I like to buy Linux magazine there.
Wegmans is like, Wegmans is the expensive store, right?
Well, no, it's not really that much more expensive than the other. There's just more stuff, more exotic stuff at Wegmans.
More stuff.
And they carry Linux magazine.
They do, and in fact, I probably will stop at Wegmans tonight on the way home just so I can get it.
And they also carry Linux World magazine. Yeah, Linux World magazine. So they have both of those there.
Which is the business and...
Yeah.
Business... type of
Linux World and Linux Magazine both are sold there, so I buy them off the shelf there, so they keep stocking them.
Mm-hmm.
And they do, people are buying them there, I can see. They are going down. And another magazine I pick up on a regular basis is CPU, Computer Power User. I don't know if either of you guys ever read that magazine.
I've read it a couple times.
One of those Windows rags?
No, actually it's not a Windows rag. It's pretty much...
It's a little bit of everything.
A little heavier on the Windows, but it does Linux, it does Mac. It's more on the hardware side. Remember what Maximum
PC used to be like? Yes, it
used to be, but now it's a Windows rag.
Yeah, now it's Windows rag.
It's Maximum Windows.
Maximum PC, you're a Windows rag.
But this kind of, you know, you got articles on video cards, you know, the $500 video cards.
Mm-hmm.
Really in-depth technical stuff on different, you know, the new technologies, hyper-threading, different types of RAM. There's a whole bunch of different articles. They do Palm devices and a section on beta software where they talk about, you know, up-and-coming new software that's coming out, lesser-known pieces of software. Typically, that's more on the end of Windows stuff. You know, they do have a warming up the Penguins column. And so, that being said, I wasn't going to pick it up because I was trying to save on money, but they had an interesting article on there about operating system file systems. What?
10 p.m., man.
What? What are you all of a sudden in a bind about staying on time for?
No, I just wanted
I don't
to let you know.
We were having a great... To
break
topic.
Keep going. That's why I didn't like saying... Wait, hold on a second. Dan, you're going over.
Well, yesterday at the love meeting, we're all sitting around talking, and next thing I'm like, well, where's Link? And he's not there anymore.
Oh, man, I had to go.
He just blew out of there.
I've had such a bad week. The thing that's like... The thing that has been most on my mind since, like, last Monday has been trying to get home and get some damn sleep. It's been one of those weeks where, like, you know, you have them all the time. Where, like, you know, you go to bed, you're lucky if you get to sleep by, like, 5 o'clock in the morning. The alarm rings 15 minutes later and you got to go back to work again. That's the kind of week I've been having, so...
Well, you guys get to sleep till 5 in the
really,
morning?
Really, really busy. No, that's when we go to sleep, is at 5 o'clock in the morning.
I'm worried.
Prove it because I have, like, recorded conversations, me typing email back and forth to Dan, like, after 2, you know?
Well, anyway.
Keep going.
All right. I picked it up. It was just a little article on operating system file systems. And I had the Linux file system and then, you know, the Mac OS X file system. And then... It was kind of heavy, though, on the Longhorn and Windows, the new Windows file system. And, again,
boo.
You know, we were talking about lack of sleep. I read this last night after having 6 hours of sleep over the past 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
So he hasn't been able to sleep since.
Hasn't been able to sleep since. Well, it's true. You know, I've been mulling this over in my head, and by all means, I don't have enough information to go into a whole lot of detail about this yet. But this new Windows file system, it's not. It sounds like a big, complex disaster from an administrative end. Now, in this article right here, they're talking about.
Well, and that would be different from their previous renditions of Windows.
Well, they're breaking. Oh,
exactly.
They're trying to break away and say it's not a hierarchical file structure. It's not a tree structure. Now, it's not that you're saving and looking at files based on their name. It's based on relationships.
Right.
Or defined categories. Like, you can have all documents that are applied to a certain person. You know, you open up a folder. Well, you don't really have folders either, but you can make folders. And it's more like...
Database structure.
Yeah, it's more like taking an NT file system, combining it with a database structure, mm-hmm. and extending these capabilities. And in the article in here, they're talking about how you could be typing up an email, for instance, and you're typing it to a person, and in the background, it's doing searches through all your information about all the other emails you sent to this guy or this person sent to you. And then, like, in the subject, it's doing searches on the subject. What?
But why would you want it to be doing that?
I don't know. And it'll pull out, as you're typing and everything, it'll start pulling together relational documents that you have, emails, whatever. So, now they're also talking about how...
Yeah, but like, for what purpose, though? You know what I mean?
For data management. Now, the big thing is...
Yeah, well, what are they going to use it for in the application? That's what I'm trying to get at. Is it going to be one of those deals where, like... You know, you're typing up and it's got this auto-completion kind of thing, and it gives you options of things, you know, information about the last time you talked to so-and-so. Because that kind of crap irritates the living hell out of me.
That's like the paperclip.
You know?
That's
that paperclip thing, you know, and that irritates
Would you like to
the
save
hell
a file?
Out of me. Yeah.
Well, the paperclip thing is now going to be...
The operating system, yeah. So they've taken the most annoying thing out of one program and made it control every freaking thing on your computer, you know?
At least it isn't Bob, though, you know?
Well, it's kind of interesting because we're all used to looking and working with a computer and thinking of files and file structures. And, you know, you got your applications. You fire them up. You do your application. It's on top of a file structure.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is breaking that whole mold. It's not a file structure anymore. It's an application. It's all one big filing cabinet. It's not even a filing cabinet. It's just your
one big program,
wherever you
yeah.
want it. however you want to organize it. It's talking about being able to do searches. Now, in this article right here, specifically, and what I found interesting, which didn't make sense to me, where was it? About doing searching, by organizing data in their what's called directed acyclic graphic, Windows file system opens a new world of possibilities for searching. Users will be able to search using multiple criteria, which is impossible in a tree structure. That's not true. Can't you do multiple criteria through Find?
I can do, yeah.
So how could they say it's impossible in a tree structure?
It's impossible in Windows.
Maybe in Windows tree structure. Well, I mean, I can pipe multiple criteria through grep, you know, and
right.
grep and Find and Unix are the problem.
Now, what's going to be interesting, I think, as they move away from their traditional file system to this Win file system, which is all geared towards all the applications. And one thing that I was reading off of Microsoft's website, they talk about how many address books do you have on your computer. You can integrate all those address books together through the Win file system. So if you need a piece of information that relates to a person, all the information relating to that person is accessible to you at your fingertips, which means when a worm comes creeping in, all that stuff is accessible
right.
to the worm.
Yep.
But even more so, what about extendability here? So in order for you to take advantage of this, you're going to have to run it in a Microsoft network because you're not going to have that same extendability across Novell or Linux or any other file system.
Well, I think where they're going to run into all the problems on it is they're going to have some kind of a backward compatibility because of all the all the external devices that you can connect to Windows. Like they're going to want to be able to integrate this into previously working environments. So if you have a pile of regular Windows computers now who are using a flat file system, when you connect this new computer to that, it's going to have to assimilate that information from their file system and make the appropriate links, as well as, dealing with the issues of external media like flash media and all of,
right.
USB media and crap like that. So,
but there is going to be, backwards compatibility is what they're building into it. But when you
think
about it,
what's going to happen is the new operating system is going to hijack it and start building databases on these.
But when you have that, when you have a system that is completely different than the rest of the world, some places it's not going to connect seamlessly, and you're going to have frustration.
Sure.
People on the other end who can't deal with this crap, and then the people who are using the crap who can't understand why the rest of the world isn't doing it or why things don't integrate seamlessly together.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems like, and even more so than for an administrative nightmare purposes, when a file gets corrupted in Windows, it is a nightmare. If you lose a Word document or something, and I just see more opportunity for corruption.
Sure, because they're
going
to have that database.
Right.
And what happens when that database gets corrupted, What's going to happen then?
When one index file goes bad.
Yeah.
It's a good question.
You lose, I have to work with FoxPro all the time. You lose an index file off of there, man, it's a pain in the butt. I couldn't imagine losing an index file off of your entire file system. And these WinWeenies that go around and they have hard drives of 120 gigs and they got them full of stuff. Like, I run Linux, man. I had a 20 gig hard drive for the longest time. I could not fill that damn thing up. You know what I mean? I get I know people with a 120 gig drive that fill them right up and they're looking for more. But I could have met them just a massive amount of information. But if this works, then perhaps Microsoft can come up with a decent uninstall program.
Format C.
I mean, besides that.
You know what?
No, I'm talking about one that actually knows where the hell the pieces of the program are that you put in there.
They're saying right now that people have such huge hard drives and data scattered all over the place. I don't think they're worried about an uninstall program. Honestly, they'll probably just let that crap floating around on the hard drive.
Oh, that's great. See, you know what happens?
But they take us back to every Windows install that I've ever done. Usually, if you use it on even semi-regularly, you got to redo that whole. You got to format that drive like once a year.
Once a year, yep.
Otherwise, it just runs like shit.
Mm-hmm.
I see this at work, and we have to deal with NT at work, which is, I mean, it's not a problem because in most cases, the limited amount of stuff that we do, it tends to work. But there are several people's drives who have just slowed down. So they're like practically nothing. You fire it up, they can't open up. They can't even open up the web browser, the Internet Explorer web browser to get to the time card program because our time cards are done that way. I had to go around installing Mozilla on everybody's computer just to be able to get past this problem. This is our fabulous IT department that couldn't figure out why they can't do this.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, well, just try another browser. We can't do that. Like, yes, you can. You install the damn thing and tell it to be the default one, and, gee, the problem went away. I wonder why. But it gets slower and slower and slower
Until it dies.
Until
you bring up an interesting point. When it does die, like right now, there's a system at work that's almost unusable. And in fact, today was a good case. There was a person who had pictures, and they were using a program called Zoom Browser, had all their pictures, and we're talking like 700 megs worth of pictures, and Windows got to the point where you couldn't do crap with it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Flop in the Nopix disk, tar those files up, SCP'd them over to another Windows machine, mm-hmm. untarred them, and we're good to go. When you have a file structure based upon not only, a file tree, but a relational database, what happens when you want to restore files or pull files off
your
file system?
You'd have to rebuild the database. There has to be, in order for this whole, and Microsoft isn't going to tell you this, but in order for this whole system to work, you still have to understand that there's still, all of these programs or these files, they're still files.
Right.
They're still an individual set of bits that have to be written down on a disk someplace. And what the relational database is doing, I'm sure they're just building a giant database that's building a relationship between the files. And the relational database itself is going to be a database probably with the file information on it. So I'm sure that they'll probably encrypt file names and do all kinds of funny, weird crap. But there's still a file system, a flat file system on there that you could conceivably, pick the files off and put them on another system and then have that system, pull them into the database and re-index them.
But do you think
there has to be a basic flat file system underneath? Even, they can run as many tricks as they want to, but there's still...
Well, of course, there is going to be a flat file system underneath, but are other operating systems going to be able to read that, to be able to pull the information out of there is the big question.
Yeah. Probably not.
It depends on... I'm not going to say no, because I'll bet they will be able to.
Eventually.
I bet it won't take very long, because there's some really... Especially for, the open source projects... There's some really ingenious people out there that are probably chomping at the bit to get a hold of some of this stuff and check it out. So I don't think it would take very long. I'm sure someone will do it eventually. The problem lies in copyright issues, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. Because Microsoft is not smart. They're going to copyright their, or if Microsoft is smart, they're going to copyright this file system so that kind of like the DVD decryption thing where it's not really legal for you to, get the stuff off. But I don't know how they could pull that off either because, the files belong to you on the file system. So they would have to, maybe it's another selling point. They can provide another piece of software to export those files off.
Well, we'll have to see and keep an eye on it. for whatever develops.
Indeed. Dan's over there playing with his penguin. Whee!
Anything else for tonight?
I think that's it. How about you, Al?
Sounds good to me.
Is that all?
That is all.
I think that's going to be it. Happy Valentine's Day for everybody.
Yes, happy Valentine's Day.
We're always willing to accept candy.
Gifts of any kind.
Gifts. Monetary gifts are always welcome.
Indeed. Any sort of fundle
real equipment. Phone patch.
Yep.
Anything else, perfect. Alan?
I'm good to go.
Good to go?
We're good. We're good. We're happy over here.
Thanks Moondog, for listening.
Yeah, thanks. Moondog, for listening and chatting on IRC at the same time.
And providing us with the links
that
we all love so much. We'll be back next week, same time, same channel, with some exciting information. Any ideas for what we're going to be doing next week?
Not a clue.
As we
we'll know about 5 minutes before the show starts.
At least, yeah. We'll,
as we head into the second half of February, the shortest month of the year. And that'll be it. And we'd like to wish Link a belated birthday. 34 years old.
Yeah, I'm getting old.
What was your official birthday?
I'm farting dust now. What's that?
What was your official birthday?
February 9th.
I don't know where the dust is in that one, but February 9th. Well, happy
February
birthday, Link.
9th.
And next time, don't keep it a secret from everybody. When's your birthday, Alan?
April 1st.
April 1st. Oh, that's look at that. You're an April Fool's.
Damn
that's
right.
That's pretty slick.
An April Fool, at least.
So yours is April 1st. Link's is February 9th. And mine's March 16th. So we're all born around roughly the same time of year.
Damn youngins all these.
Now, what was it like back in the Depression days, Alan?
Yeah. I remember when.
All right, well, thank you very much.
My social studies teacher used to tell me about, food stamps and stuff that they had, sugar stamps or whatever.
S&H Green Stamps.
That's what it was.
Hey, I got a lot of things off of Green Stamps. I used to work at Lanco. We used to get them all the time.
He's a whole different guy, this Green Stamps, though, I'm sure.
Close to me.
Well, I guess that's it, because Link has to get home and get some sleep.
Yep.
Alan's got to get up in a couple hours.
Dan's got to get some sleep, except for, we'll all be home, playing with these stupid Flash Media games, but...
Not me. Obviously. Thanks for listening.
Thank you very much. And here is
our... Talk to you next time.
Theme ruined. Unlike last week, when I played the promo at the end, and then it crashed. Thanks a lot for listening. Have a good week.
Good night.
Good night.
Pulling a Flink. Pulling a Flink Tech Show. Pulling a Flink. Pulling a Flink Tech Show.